to Poderosas FC Radio. We're back with an off-season report. I'm your host, Maite, and I'm here with...
What up, y'all? It's Johnson. We're back. They're ready to start the new season. How y'all feeling?
It's been a really busy off-season, so we have a lot to talk about today. But before all of that, like, how you been?
I've been good. It seems like it's been forever since we've been at BMO Stadium in La Fortaleza. But then also, I can't believe how quickly the new season's about to start. And so I've been good overall, keeping myself occupied with some SRLA commitments. I'm trying to run the marathon, and I did 18 miles yesterday, which nearly got me. But I made it, and I'm here. Stronger because of it.
Congratulations, because like... genuinely, I could never do that. That's so hard. But that's really awesome. I haven't not run at all. So that's incredible. But you know what? It's been a good break. I feel like we're coming back really inspired, not just for the podcast, but for the season and in general to like keep showing up for ourselves and for Palestine and for our community.
Yeah, for sure. Have you been keeping busy in this off season with the you know, not as frequent ACFC, you know, Poderosas FC Radio duties? What have you been up to?
A lot of work, mostly. So it's really good timing the way that the off season has been, because I got really busy with work and with a little bit of, you know, traveling home for the holidays and all of that. So yeah, I kept myself busy, and you know, I feel like the people in my life know right now, like, ACFC, well, you know, and the soccer is my priority starting, you know, March 16th, you know.
Like, enjoy me while you have my time, and then don't be sad when I'm too busy for you. So I dig it. I'm just thrilled. It's basically a month, like about 2 days short of a month is going to be the opening game, March 16th. We open with Bay FC, correct?
Yes, that's right. And, you know, we're playing them before that at Coachella in a week from now, or a little less than a week from now. So we'll get a little preview.
Yeah, a little preview of our northern neighbors, northern cousins there, Bay FC. Yeah, that's gonna be exciting. Let's maybe jump right in then and catch up with what we've been up to. Luckily, through Poderosas as the supporter group, there's been a few events that we've been involved in, you know, connected with larger global issues, global movements, and then also trying to build up to this new season. And so, let's dive right in. So unfortunately, things haven't changed a whole lot in occupied Palestine with Israel's bombing and, you know, rumored invasion of Gaza or further invasion or anything like that. And things have actually gotten, you know, so much worse. And seeing so many solidarity events pop up around Los Angeles, around California, and just globally has been really inspiring. There's so many people speaking out. And so Poderosas, as a supporter group, you know, we are day one, ride or die for Palestine. And so we organized our own little event, and we wanted it to be a little bit different. You may or may not know, a couple years back, I think it's been a while now, I don't know the exact year, but some children in Gaza set a world record with the number of kites flown simultaneously. And so the idea of a you know, kite up in the air, you know, freely flowing in the breeze, you know, no worries, no threats of violence, and all that kind of thing has really become symbolic of that particular struggle. And so we wanted to organize our own kite flying day. We were down at LA State Historic Park. We put it on all of our social media accounts, spread the word through our, you know, various networks and everything. And it was a really, really cool turnout. Probably about 4, maybe 5 hours long. A lot of folks coming out, just so many kids, so many adults just running with joy and carefree. It was probably the least windy day in recent memory, which was kind of a bummer. And so getting the kites up in the air was a bit of a struggle. But the overall community support and just showing of support for the larger Palestinian resistance was just absolutely beautiful. And so that was a really just motivating and fulfilling event. And hopefully stuff like that can you know, continue to push larger folks in power to actually make the right choice and push for a ceasefire and do something more. But, you know, flying a kite's not going to end the conflict, but we can only do what we're capable of doing. I know you were there as well, Maite. How did you see the event?
Felt like a huge success. You know, this was something that we did for us as a community, like as the Poderosas community, and we extended it out to our friends and the other groups and anybody who wanted to join. And a lot of people wanted to join. I think it was a very beautiful event, and I think, you know, we collectively needed it because it's like all of this is difficult. Like, this is very difficult. So I'm very happy with like what was organized and how Poderosas did. And yeah, very, very, and I'm hoping that more of these kinds of events, you know, can be thrown. I think a lot of people were showing like interest in the next one, you know.
Yeah, it was such a success, and a lot of folks mentioned, when are we going to do this again? This was great. I brought my whole family out. There was so many little kids and everything. And so once the weather clears up a little bit, it's a little rainy, drizzly here in LA right now. I think we could definitely, you know, plan a similar event, and hopefully the wind is, you know, a little bit more accommodating this time. But yeah, not to, you know, disconnect the sports from the politics, because the politics will be interwoven throughout this entire podcast, as is the Poderosas approach to things. But we have opening day around the corner, and then we just had some kind of front office organized events coming up. You want to talk about any of that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it sounds like this is like the third or second annual one, but we had media day a couple weeks ago now, and I was joined by some amazing Poderosas fam, Diego, Isaac, who's here in the room right now, shout out, and Mondo, who are all incredible creatives. You know, the people that you can get to come out on a Thursday afternoon are creatives. So that's who showed up and showed out. And we had a really great time talking to Rocky Rodriguez, who was so lovely. We got to do a little shoot with them. You can't see it until next month, but when you see it, man, you're going to love it. You're going to love it. We also hung out with Elizabeth Eddy, so also got re-signed. Very exciting. And Angelina Anderson, you know, we've all become a huge fan of. And Sarah Gordon, the MVP, like friendliest, loveliest person, best defender in the league. So It was a really good time. I'm glad that we had the opportunity to connect with those players and to show out and remind them, hey, you have our support. We're Poderosas. And then afterwards, you know, they did a little shoot with all the SGs, a bunch of members. And that was really fun because I got to kick it with our Pandemonium friends and our Mosaic friends and do a little photo shoot with them and stuff like that. I don't know what's going to happen with that particular footage and media because that wasn't us. That was ACFC team doing it. But I'm really excited to see what comes of it because the sets and everything were really incredible. I am excited about that. I'm glad we had the opportunity. Like, obviously, we're not first and foremost, but like largely huge fans of these team members, you know, these players. And so it was great. It was wonderful.
I'm really happy to hear that not only was the event a success, but, you know, connecting with those particular players on a more personal level, that it was a positive thing and it wasn't something where, you know, you love them on the pitch and they're like, oh, they're kind of cold in person and all that. And I mean, it would be fine if that was the case. Not everyone has to always be on and always, you know, be entertaining and all, but it's just nice when folks you already look up to in some capacity are like genuinely good people. And that's really cool to hear. And then, you know, as far as that footage goes, I would love to see it. Hopefully ACFC social media team, you know, realizes the gold that they have, and they put out some little short videos leading up to the release of the media day stuff or anything like that. And so should be cool. Starting tomorrow is the first ever, I believe, CONCACAF Women's Gold Cup. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and maybe humble brag about all the matches you get to go to?
Oh my gosh. I have to be honest. I don't know that it's the first one. You might be right, but I'm not sure that it is. Either way, though, it's really exciting because it's a lot of the games are here in LA, and USA and Mexico are on in the same group stage together, along with Argentina and now the Dominican Republic. So it's really, really exciting to be able to just like, you know, I had to travel halfway across the world to see some of these teams. So now I just get to see them in my backyard. So I did jump on the opportunity and I bought all the tickets, not knowing if I was going to be available because of work. But, you know, sometimes you got to risk it for the biscuit. But yeah, I highly recommend going to these games. Like, how often do you have an opportunity to see amazing national teams go up against each other here in LA? You know what I mean? Here in Carson. Yeah, I highly recommend everybody go. You know, I think they didn't even realize how well the ticket sales were going to go because they were running out and they had to open up more seats and, you know, had angry phone calls from other supporters. But I'm really excited. I hope people make it out because the semifinals are also going to be here. And the way that they're doing it, like out of, I think, the 12 teams, 8 teams move on to the quarterfinals, so you get to see a bunch of people, you know, potentially Canada, potentially Brazil, potentially like so many really great teams. So I'm extremely excited. I'm disappointed, I'm not gonna lie, that FIFA has done a terrible job promoting the event, but excited nonetheless.
I think the recent NWSL success, the recent Women's World Cup success, hopefully they can continue that momentum and really build to further the women's game.
Very well said. Very well said. Yeah, you're right. You know, I can't think of when this Gold Cup has been promoted to me, like, without me seeking it out.
And then one last quick thanks, quick shout out, always supportive, just always down at a moment's notice, would be Nico from Espacio 1839. That is where we are currently recording. That's where we have recorded almost every episode of Poderosas FC Radio. Obviously not the crudos, but the larger episodes. And so big shout out. We're here now. Stores closed. They literally give us the keys and we can kind of, you know, do our thing over here. And so we want to plug them real quick. March 15th, a little under a month from now, will be the Eres Poderosa art show here at Espacio. And so if you don't already have plans for that Ides of March, please come down, check out the art show. It's absolutely going to be incredible because everything that they do is always incredible. And then aside from the art show is just everything that they already stock. If you've never been down here, it's just the coolest gifts, the coolest items. You know, you're not going to go away empty handed by any means.
Shout out to Espacio 1839, always holding it down for Poderosas. Well, I think it's time for us to get to like the fun part of this, to our No Pasa Nada, a segment where we talk about all the happenings around ACFC.
Coming off a really awesome season, we made the playoffs for the first time. Got knocked out in the first round. We were all bummed out. But then immediately all of us were just thinking, okay, how do we build on this? How do we make this, you know, year two, just the stepping stone to like real success in year three? And so many folks were contemplating, you know, what type of offseason acquisitions might happen, or, you know, who are the missing pieces that we might need to really push so that we can compete and, you know, maybe, you know, compete for the supporter shield or a top spot in the playoffs and all that. And so luckily the front office has been busy. We have a lot of new players on the roster, a lot to talk about, a lot to brag about. We had some departures, some hurt more than others. And so we're going to talk about how our lineup and roster have changed. And specifically, we'll start with what we're calling the wins, the acquisitions, the new additions to our roster. And so I'm going to list off a couple names real quick, and then we'll talk a little bit more about how we think they're going to impact the third season for Angel City. Obviously, we got to start with Messiah Bright. Amazing, amazing there. Maggie Dougherty Howard, Casey Fair, Hannah Stamba, Rocky Rodriguez, Giselle Thompson. We drafted three players. I was kind of surprised the draft was only three rounds long, but you know, that's how it goes in NWSL these days. And so we have Curry, Garziano, and Knox. I think there's one defender and two midfielders. Maite, you can kind of fact check me on that. And then we changed up our coaching staff a little bit. Not a surprise, given that a lot of the coaching staff, goalkeeper, coach, and some others were still from the old regime. And then now that Becky Tweed is, you know, had the interim title removed and is a full-time coach, it's not a surprise that Tweed would want to bring in her own people and really just folks that kind of share the vision and all that. And so we have Lee Wynn, Omar Zini, and Oliver Blitz, just to name a few. I think there's even more additions coming on with the coaching staff. And so just really, really, really bright along there. Given all those acquisitions, and there's a lot of new faces that are going to be on the pitch there at BMO, what are your initial reactions and who are you really excited to see suit up for our team?
Oh man, that's an easy one for me. I think I've been a fan of Messiah Bright from the first day that she hit the ground running in Orlando. Absolutely. Pride. And that's hard for me to say. I'm pretty hardcore ACFC, but I saw her talent so quickly. When I met her in person, I told her that she was the real rookie of the year. I was like, how did you not get it? And I understand, the other rookie of the year made it to the championship. That's huge. But yeah, Messiah Bright was, this is going to be a bold statement. She's the biggest win, I think, for ACFC this season.
Easily. Yeah, easily.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and it's just so funny. You have such, I guess, not clairvoyant powers, or maybe you just make things happen, might they? And I'd love to hear a little bit more about how you ran into Messiah Bright and exactly what you said, because you kind of predicted this acquisition and this, big change for just an amazingly, talk about nominative determinism, an amazingly upside potential player and someone that I'm just so thrilled. Can you tell us a little bit more about that weird chance encounter you had?
Yeah, for sure. I went to the championship game last year because it was in San Diego. That's a 2-hour drive to go to such an amazing game. I went out there. And in the little pre-party that they organized at Snapdragon, I saw her walking by, casual, and was way too shy to say hi. So one of my friends asked her for me. And we got to chatting a little bit, and I was, telling her I was a big fan and all of that, and took a picture with me. Very, very kind, very, very friendly person. She was so lovely. And at the end of it, I don't know what possessed me to say this to her, but I said to her as we were saying goodbye, "Can't wait for you to join ACFC." And she laughed. It was a joke. It was a joke. You know what I mean? I said it as a joke too, but manifestation works in mysterious ways. And, I don't know that I had anything to do with it at all. I probably didn't, but I choose to believe, hashtag Ted Lasso. And yeah, I'm very excited about it. Who on this list would you say that you're most excited about?
Yeah, that definitely confirms that you orchestrated the Messiah Bright transfer and acquisition. But I love the story so much. In addition to Messiah Bright, because I think we would always play well last year and we were just kind of a goal short. We would have all kinds of shots on target and just couldn't finish. Creative chances couldn't finish. And so hopefully Messiah Bright's that missing piece that just unlocks our offense and really starts clobbering people. I'm curious and really interested to see how Gisele Thompson fits in, knowing the success that Alyssa, the older sister, had in their rookie year, and now we're able to bring on Gisele. At first, I was a little concerned, it kind of feels like, nepotism, we're just bringing on little sister because maybe, that's going to keep Alyssa happier somehow. And then the more I looked into Gisele, who I was very unfamiliar with, I was like, oh, she might actually be the most talented of the family. She might be at least as talented, maybe even a little bit more talented than Alyssa. I'm not, holding my breath on that statement, but has just incredible potential, plays a different role in that she's more defensive minded, but still attacking at the same time, could be, out wide as a fullback. And so knowing that we could have Alyssa maybe through the middle up top and then Gisele holding it down defensively, but then also serving in balls for sister. I can't wait for them to connect and that, Gisele assists Alyssa or Alyssa assists Gisele. That's just going to be incredible. And hopefully it only pushes both of them to work even harder. And that kind of seems the nature of their, you know, relationship with each other, that if one gets really good, the other one has to get even better. And then they push and they push and they push and they push. And so, I like all the acquisitions, but I think seeing Giselle, what might come from that is what I'm really curious about. So.
Yeah. I can understand, like, from, you know, without knowing, you know, you'd be a little suspicious. Like, we signed this almost 18-year-old out of nowhere. She's not played even in college, you know, but, you know, Giselle Thompson played in as a practice squad member with ACFC last season. So it's not like she's not unfamiliar with the team. The rumor is that her and Alyssa can read each other's minds on the field. That's going to be incredible. And, you know, they were also in a movie as the Switchblade Sisters. So that's a cool little another manifestation moment. I think it's going to be really exciting. And I love that we're dodging the draft in a way, because players should have a say in where they go. The draft is, like, very controversial. Mm-hmm. So Giselle wants to stay home. She wants to be with her family. She wants to be with her sister. And she wants to play somewhere where she's comfortable. And, like you said, she got called up for the practice squad with the U.S. Women's National Team right now, who's playing in the Gold Cup. She's a defensive player. That's where, you know, there's a lot of demand right now. You know, we've been playing with the same defensive players with the U.S. Women's National Team for a very long time, and she's going to fill a big need there, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think they would make this signing if they weren't sure that, you know, Giselle was going to work. Like you said, a member of the practice squad almost the entire season, you know, called up here and there for some national team duties. And so that'll be cool. That'll be cool. Overall, I like the new players. My one hesitation, and I'm curious to see how you feel about this, is that we're either going for absolute children, like babies, or we're going for people that are close to, if not already 30. And I think Messiah Bright is the only player who's kind of middle-aged, quote-unquote, for a soccer player. And obviously, age is always silly. Like, wow, they're already 30. They're so old. But, like, in terms of professional athletes, it's, like, you know, kind of twilight of the career. And so, you know, with Casey Fair being 16, maybe 17 by now, but still very much a teenager. And then the, you know, Giselle, obviously, still very young, I think maybe 18 now, around there. And then we have Maggie, who's 28, and Rocky, who's already 30. And so it'll be interesting. Like, are they making these signings, you know, for the future? Are they wanting to win now? I would love to see, I guess, more 23, 24, 25 year olds that are just hitting their prime and that are proven and that we know are going to be, you know, out and out starters and contributors every single game, versus somebody who in Rocky, and I think Rocky has an amazing career, but then missed most of last season through injury and is, like, the wrong side of 30. Like, we're just already injury plagued enough as it is. More on that a little bit later. And so how are you feeling about, you know, the front office business and the players we're bringing in and their short, medium to long term contributions?
Yeah, I definitely feel like there's a little stuck in between a rock and a hard place, because they're doing both things, right? They want to win now. And I think that's why they're bringing in the Rocky Rodriguez, because she's strong midfielder. She scores like a madman. And Maggie Doherty Howard, you know, proven experience. And then we bring in the youth because we're planning for the future. That's Casey. That's Giselle. And they're very strong. You know, like you said, Giselle has national experience. Casey Fair, she was a 16-year-old at the World Cup, doing really, really well with the short amount of time that she had. So you're right. We are sort of like grandmas and babies FC. And we'll see how that works out. We don't know. Like, we have some of those middle-of-the-line players in Messiah Bright and a few others that came back for the next season that, you know, we are very happy with, right? There's Hammond. There's, like, we had Junendo. She was, you know, gonna be one of them. But yeah, so we'll see how it goes, because it was a little concerning. I understand the concerns for sure, but we're a gritty team. Look at last year. Like, we had no depth And now we have all the depth, all the depth. And honestly, like, the roster deadlines are not done yet. We don't know who our final roster is going to be. We don't know if we're going to keep any of our draftees because they were all third round picks. And so we'll see how it goes. But yeah, I'm not even going to lie. I'm very excited about Rocky Rodriguez. She's one of my favorite players in the league. When we got her, I was over the moon. And like I mentioned earlier, an incredibly nice person.
Yeah, hopefully just everyone stays healthy. Unfortunately, that already has not been the case with training camp. If you're unaware, the ACFC squad has been doing training camp in Florida. And one of our very own beloved players, our family, myself, my partner Dora, and our daughter Boots, our absolute favorite player, Junendo, has ruptured her ACL and is already listed as a season-ending injury. And so the ACL curse, the SEI curse, continues, sadly. We've yet to have... This is kind of wild to realize. We've yet to have a season where there hasn't been someone with a season-ending injury to start. And so we had Kristen Press. I think they only made it like 3 games or something like that. And then we had Simone Charlie last year with that. Sarah Gordon didn't even play the entire first season. And then we've yet to see Merritt Mathias play at all. I'm always convinced that they're just, you know, a non-existent, you know, made up fictional player that, you know, somebody snagged off of FIFA or something like that. But yeah, just the injury bug has been wild. And of all the players, I mean, June is still quite young. I think only 24, if I had to guess, and just, you know, coming off a really successful Women's World Cup where she had a couple of assists. I want to say she scored. I'm kind of blanking out. I know she had several assists, couple goals, just looked really good. They were leading up to the Olympics and then bam, this happened. And I know it's all because of Florida's Don't Say Gay law. I know that is what caused it. She was over there and probably upset and just like, you know what, hurt her knee. Just like, I can't stand for this. But while I appreciate such solidarity, I wish it hadn't happened. And then I was confused because I see a video and June is already just adorable, right? She's like, after the game, she's always just throwing up her little hearts and coming around to see everyone and just so thrilled to see every supporter. And it was a really cute video of her and Stomba just like playing around and dancing. And I'm thinking like, oh, you're dancing already? What's going on? And then the rest of the IG story was her doing all her physical therapy and all her rehab stuff already. And so hopefully they come back stronger than ever. But yeah, just heartbroken. I know this was supposed to be, you know, later in the list of departures, but I can't help but talk about my my favorite right off the bat. How you feeling about Junendo?
I wish her the speediest of recoveries. She's such a resilient player. Football is life for her, like more than anybody else that I've ever seen. And yeah, that's all I can say. It's a huge loss for us, like tremendous, like irreplaceable type of loss for this season. I feel like if we make it to playoffs, like she could be ready in time. Like that's my gut feeling. Like she's gonna come back because she's not, you know, Press is a little older. She's taking her time coming back. Like she's really going through it. Like if we see her come back, I truly hope so, but it's just like not a guarantee, you know. So that's another loss. So honestly, let's fully dive into it. This is losses time. We lost in the off season Scarlett Camberos, who went off to the Bay FC, and then McCaskill. That's going to be a whole conversation. Simone Charlie, she's so loved. Danny Weatherholt, same. And we did not renew the contracts for Pluck or Eisenhower, who has now retired. And yeah, Junendo, I feel like biggest L for us. Well, second to maybe Camberos, because she's not coming back. You know what I mean? Junendo's coming back.
That's a good point. And because June has so much career ahead of her, that I love your optimism that, you know what, when we make playoffs, June will probably make that playoff roster. And I'm no physical therapist or kinesiologist or anything like that. But in those like videos, she was already doing some pretty cool stuff, rehabbing the knee. And so she already looks strong. And then knowing Endo's background, how she had to train by herself after the Fukushima nuclear disaster, kind of shut down everything around where she grew up in Japan. I mean, she's weathered worse and you know, came out successful. So no doubt that Endo will come back. These other players, though, we can't see them coming back. To be perfectly honest, there's only two on this list that I'm really sad about. Scarlett Camberos, I have to say, was probably a top five Poderosa fan favorite. We absolutely loved Camberos. Many of us saw her when America Femenil came to play, and she was just lighting up our defense, and we were just like, wow, like, who is this player? She's so dynamic, she's so great. And then obviously under really garbage circumstances, she's able to come and play for us, and then it was a really good fit. She seemed always really happy. We got to see a lot of insight on her personal life and the family she came from, and we were just always showing her so much love. And you know, her giant smile, the time she got player of the match and all that kind of stuff. And then several of the Poderosas would see her and her family, like, you know, getting a little bite to eat, getting you know, a beer, a cocktail, whatever it might be, at some local spots around. And she's just so humble and like, oh, yeah, I'm just here with my mom and dad and whatever else. And so that was always a common thing. I think it was La Chuperia, but yeah, just so cool that she's just, you know, a regular person, so down to earth, but then was so dynamic and so good. I can see the strategic move from the front office in the, I believe that trade allowed us to be insulated and protected from Bay FC's expansion draft, where they could have just taken, you know, anyone that wasn't protected. And it sounds like, I guess, the front office, hopefully Tweed was consulted. Not that anyone didn't like Camberos, but just of all the players that you had to lose, maybe they could weather losing that particular player. It still hurts to say. And then from her end, and she's been nothing but love for the team and everything else. She wasn't always a nailed on starter, and she didn't always get all the minutes that she probably deserved. And so maybe with Bay, she will be a focal point and will be, you know, given all the minutes and all the playing time that she really does deserve. Do you share these sentiments? And I already know the answer to that one, Maite.
I mean, you know, Scarlett was my favorite. I think, like, everything aside that you just said, because all of that is so true. She was an incredible player, especially towards the end of the season. She can cross like no other. And for the Mexican national team, she's been an absolute star. Heartbreakingly, she just had an injured in the training camp with the Mexican national team.
I hadn't heard.
Yeah, yeah. She's injured. She's out. I don't think it's SEI, but it's pretty serious. She's not playing the Gold Cup anymore. I don't think she's going to be opening with Bay FC for a little while. It's so unfortunate. I was literally was so looking forward to seeing her at the Gold Cup. She's one of my favorite Mexican national players. So it's so unfortunate. It's a loss, not just for us. It's a loss for the league. It's a loss for the national team. So a speedy recovery to her. Everybody loves you. You're probably not listening to this, but, you know.
If you are.
Yeah, if somebody knows her. I don't know. But yeah, it's such a loss. Such a loss. I was very heartbroken, but I know that she okayed the move. She wants to be a starter, and I'm sure she's going to be a starter as soon as she recovers. So, but moving on a little bit to a couple of other players that were very beloved that left. Simone Charlie, probably the friendliest player out there. Maybe like only Riley could like match her on the amount of friendliness of like with us supporters. And Danny Weatherholt, who had her weather hose following.
Hashtag weather hose
are so devastated that she left. But you know what? This is free agency. They have control over where they want to go. And I think that's beautiful, you know. So, yeah, McCaskill also left. So we basically did a little trade because McCaskill, who, if we're being honest, was not the best Angel City fit. She went to San Diego. Once again, free agency. That was her choice. She wants to be there, and I don't think a lot of people are that upset about it. So we in turn got Maggie Doherty Howard, and we'll see how that goes. She seems very friendly. She seems very cool.
Yeah, definitely sad about Charlie. I can't think of a harder working player. And Charlie didn't start a lot, but was total super sub. And when they came on, just gave everything to create chances and to hustle on both sides of the ball and just really just never stopped. And so, and they were, it's such a heartbreak. They were in really good form. I want to say they were starting to score a couple goals, and then the Achilles SEI, happened, and, you know, ruptured Achilles. That's a long recovery. And then, yeah, going to Orlando. And I don't mind Orlando. That, you know, I think all of us, for the most part, you know, we have our teams that we root for, and we're ride or die for Angel City, but then we also just want women's sports to do well in general. And so there's few teams that we want to, like, you know, crash and burn. And so we always have our league wide favorites and, you know, teams that we're sympathetic to. And so I appreciate the landing she'll have. Hopefully it's a soft one over at Orlando. And hopefully she continues to shine there. Weatherhole, I used to love Weatherhole, and you know, she had her bright spots. Too often, I think, kind of went anonymous, would kind of disappear in midfield, and then you'd, you know, post game thinking about it, like, was she even involved? Like, where was she, you know, here and here and here, and just had that ability to kind of, you know, kind of get lost in all of it. And so I definitely wish them well, but, hopefully we're able to kind of build better. McCaskill is such a complicated player, and, you know, just all of it. I remember initially season one, the team was kneeling during the national anthem, and McCaskill was the one that would not kneel. And so right away, all of us, you know, radical lefties in the Poderosas, were kind of just like, what's up with that? Okay, what's going on? And just even her gameplay, aside from maybe her personal politics and all that, was never quite that fit, as you already mentioned, and just a little bit slow. And she would, like, for every great pass she would have, there'd be two or three where it just didn't happen. And I used to joke that, at least in our very first season, McCaskill was where counterattacks would go to die, because she would get the ball and then kind of dribble and then kind of hold it and kind of dribble. And then all the defense would already be back before she attempted to make some sort of a pass. And it just wasn't happening. I love a quick transition. I love a counterattack. I love to just be lethal, and catch teams, you know, kind of snoozing a little bit. And McCaskill is not that player. Was also our leading scorer last season, which is like, ooh, you know, we probably don't make playoffs without McCaskill last season. And so I definitely have to acknowledge the hard work and the achievement on the pitch. And, you know, they were always grinding for, a little bit extra and very good instincts as far as right place, right time, and would get some rebounds or would be able to really turn a broken play into a scoring opportunity. And that showed. And so, hopefully the likes of Messiah Bright and Casey Fair and just all the rest that are coming back will reinvigorate that offense, and we can make up for McCaskill's goals and then some. We already have a huge rivalry with San Diego, and it's not like the most pleasant. You know, their supporters have been kind of whack. Their stadium hasn't been the best reception. And so, seeing, and I'm sure it was, you know, just social media teams, but, you know, within a week or so of her signing with San Diego, that she's kind of already throwing shade on LA, and Angel City in, you know, some silly beach running videos and all that. Like, she's not going to get the warmest welcome probably back at BMO. Whereas someone like Camberos, like, if she was in that starting lineup game one for Bay, I cannot see us not giving her a huge warm welcome, and just showing her all the love and all the rest of it. But McCaskill, like, don't expect much when you come back, okay? Sorry.
So fair. Well, now that we kind of discussed all the wins, all the losses, we know what our team will mostly look like, right? Obviously, it's not a finalized roster yet, but let's talk fantasy ACFC lineups. What's a starting 11 for you? Like, you already saw. I've already shown it off. I created a board with my starting 11.
Yeah, this is, you know, basically how we kept ourselves satisfied soccer-wise in the off-season. Myself, Maite, Celeste, shout out, and a couple other folks that are just really geeking out on tactics and rosters and all that kind of thing. And so with each new roster addition or departure, we're like, okay, like, what do you think now? What do you think now? And so I'm really excited. Angelina Anderson, I nailed on starting goalkeeper. Much love to Haracic, but you know, it's got to be to the player that is most consistent and makes the most stops and all the rest of it. And Angelina is definitely the one. Sarah Gordon's a nailed on starter at center back. Nielsen was getting a lot of time at the end of last season, and I liked her. I'm open to others. I also paired up with Sarah Gordon at center back. I love M.A. Vignola as a fullback. You know, we mentioned Giselle already, and that would be pretty interesting. Obviously, can't overlook Allie Riley, you know, the captain, amazing presence on the field. It's just the fact that we have that depth and those tools. What do you think as far as goalie and defensive line? How would you set up our defense, might they?
I agree with everything you just said. Giselle Thompson in the center back position, I think with Sarah Gordon, potentially lethal. You know what I mean? It's potentially unstoppable right there. Yeah, I think it's going to be incredible to have that strong of a defensive unit. I'm sorry to move on a little bit, but because then all of our midfielders can be attacking focused instead of defensive focused. And that's Rocky Rodriguez. You know what I mean? A healthy Rodriguez is lethal. So I say Rocky Rodriguez in that midfield with Henry from France. She's meant to come back from loan, hopefully in time for our opening game. And she's a very strong player. We still have Hammond. You know, Hammond is a very strong player who's been growing and growing and growing. Maggie Doherty Howard is also a midfielder who I think could be a big competition there in the midfield. And like, midfield, you know what I mean? Like, that's all we've talked about for the past couple of years, and let's see what we actually do. Merritt Mathias is back from injury. She's supposed to be great. We haven't seen it yet, but if she's got the skills, then put her out there. Put her in that midfield, you know what I mean? Well, attacking midfielders, like, that's a dream come true.
Yeah. It's just cool that you're going to have this revamped, you know, hopefully much stronger midfield. I'm always a little nervous. I feel like a kid who, you know, parent walked out and like, yeah, like I promised to come back as far as Amandine Henry goes, because it's, you know, yeah, it's off season. You're going to go play in Europe again. And I'm like, they better come back. They better, you know, be there for us and be the same defensive and, you know, just solid midfield presence as they were before. I guess I'm a little still processing the Julie Ertz retirement, how it's like, hey, thanks, I got what I wanted, now I'm like, I'm out kind of thing. And so I can't see Henri doing anything like that, hopefully. Yeah, we totally have trust issues to work through with our midfielders. But yeah, if Mathias, you know, can stay healthy and shows what they've got, that'd be amazing. I'd love to see Rocky just absolutely show out. To your earlier point, and I know we kind of went back and forth on this, you know, over our chat, I would love to see Giselle lined up next to Sarah Gordon as a center back. She's just so small, though. She's like so slight, and you know, doesn't mean she can't, you know, bop with the rest of them and really get physical and all that. But I just, knowing that there's just attackers that give zero F's about pushing anyone around and how rough and physical NWSL can be, especially right there in our own 18 yard box and all that. I'm just like, oh, okay. Like maybe I could see it. And, you know, that frees up Jasmine Spencer and some others to then slot in, you know, at that fullback. But then going forward, and speaking of Spencer, actually spent a lot of time attacking, last year. And so I'd love to see Spencer continue to attack and just be an absolute spark plug up front. I'd love Claire Emsley to just absolutely go off and just find all the goals and work so hard. I absolutely adore Emsley. And then who am I? Like Alyssa. Alyssa, I think can find. I think Alyssa in the middle has to be nailed on.
Well, Messiah is gonna. I feel like.
Oh, duh.
Yeah, Messiah Bright is going to be incredible in the front line.
Or down the middle?
That's a good. So I think Messiah Bright is a center forward as well. But Alyssa has done a lot of left wing. Mm-hmm. Claire Emsley needs to be the starting right wing every single game, quite frankly. And I think I'm looking at Sydney LaRue and what a good form she's in right now. I know she's so injury prone. I know she's older, but that is a super sub.
Yeah.
She's going to be like the most super sub ever this season. I can see her coming in and just absolutely destroying people in the last 15. You know what I mean? So, yeah. But I see Messiah Bright being a starter, Alyssa being a starter, Emsley being a starter. Like, those are no questions asked for me.
Yeah. And I think the games Alyssa started for the national team, she was on the left as well, if I remember that right. And so we could have that left attacker, Alyssa, Messiah Bright down the middle, Emsley down the right. And that is going to be formidable. That's going to be the nightmare of so many. Oh gosh, just speed for days and just instinct and all of it. And so, yeah, center backs are going to be absolutely shaking in their boots. And I'm absolutely here for it. So I'm going into it optimistically as far as this season goes. I know you are as well. And so just really, really excited to see what comes. Again, crossing our fingers, no more injuries. And if just folks stay healthy and this team gels as it already started to under Tweed and further, just solidifies, I think we're going to come out the gates real hot, and we're going to need to, because there's so many teams that have absolutely strengthened and just become juggernauts. And so this league was already crazy competitive, really, really difficult. It had always been kind of a Portland oil rain back and forth, as far as them dominating. And I don't think that's going to be the case anymore. And it's just excited to see who does really rise above to that top of the table, who does make playoffs, who does, lift the silverware and has those amazing seasons. Hopefully it's us.
Absolutely. Well, as you guys can see, there's tons to be excited about with the ACFC lineup. We didn't even mention Casey Fair, who's probably going to be incredible super sub as well. Yeah. But we got to move on. We got to talk about league-wide, because you've already kind of gotten into it. Other teams across the NWSL are recruiting, and there's a lot of changes this season. So we want to keep you guys informed, as well as ourselves informed. The season starts March 16th, following the March 15th single match Challenge Cup. That's going to be the Shield winners versus the Championship winners. That's Gotham versus San Diego. I'm not going to be going to that one, but I'll probably watch it. But it's really exciting. There's a lot of dates. There's a lot of things that we can talk about, but we already started on it. So, and big NWSL-wide moves that happened. I mean, Gotham brought in half of the U.S. Women's National Team and recruited like crazy. Bay FC is recruiting like champs. Like, I've never seen such incredible moves. Obviously, they stole Scarlett from us, but they also got Oshawala from like Europe or something. And that's supposed to be one of the most incredible players ever. So, and then on the flip side, the WSL, the Women's Super League in Europe, took Christy Mewis and Emily Fox off to West Ham and Arsenal, respectively. So how are you feeling? What big NWSL moves are you like, whoa? What the shit, what the heck?
Yeah, I was already upset with Gotham for how solid of a team that they built the season after that they were bottom of the table. They were the worst team 2 years ago, and then they were able to keep a certain players, bring in some others, and just really build and build and build. Absolute shout out to Midge Purse. Hopefully Maite can run into Midge in some event and work her same magic as she did with Messiah Bright, because I absolutely adore Midge Purse. They were already so strong and, didn't have a high seed in the playoffs last year, but absolute buzzsaw through the playoffs and had a great championship game and all the rest of it. And then they've just absolutely reloaded Crystal Dunn, and I'm sure I'm going to forget a couple others, but so many really amazing players where we kept like, wait, what? And it was such a funny, Twitter kind of social media gag that everyone was in talks with Gotham. And then we you know, you'd start to see posts from the other ACFC supporter groups that like non-soccer players were in talks with Gotham. Like everyone was in talks with Gotham because they were just, you know, acquiring everyone and poaching all the players and all the rest of it. And we were just like, you just won the championship, you know, like save some for the rest of us kind of thing. And so I don't see them losing their momentum. They've only strengthened. Really worried about them, and they've been a little bit of a thorn in our side at times. Our very first season, had we beaten Gotham, we probably would have made playoffs, and they were not a strong Gotham team then, and we were, you know, trying to figure ourselves out as well. And then they come into BMO, what was then the bank, and beat us when we were probably the better team, and it was just like, oh, come on. And then last year, I think we split the games, and they're just always a really difficult opponent. And so, I mean, we always want to play the best, but maybe not somebody that strong. How you feeling about Gotham yourself?
Yeah, they're so stacked, and they were stacked last season. You know, like Mitch Purse and Lynn Williams in the front line. Low-key, yeah, that was the solid front line, like unbeatable front line. Yeah, they're supposed to be our East Coast foes. I don't think we have as much beef with them. But you're right. Like we lost our opening game to them last season. That was the start of a rough patch for ACFC. So yeah, they've been wild, and so San Diego and Gotham, I think, are like locked in as our current foes. Whereas I think Bay FC, as much as they look really killer and they have a great coach, I think that's our besties. That's our like little league besties. You know what I mean? Maybe I just have that feeling because of Scarlet, but they just like, I don't know. I feel like when we go up to the Bay, we're going to be like, it'll be like saying hi to old friends, you know, a little friendly competition, you know?
Yeah, that's the hope at least. And again, we're all about the women's game flourishing regardless, and expansion teams with Bay and Utah. They're what's the official Utah name?
Royals.
It is the Royals. I was going to say the Royals and it didn't sound right, but with Bay FC and Utah Royals, going to be awesome. And we want those expansion teams to do really well. I agree. And I really want to have the same, our Bay Area besties, when it comes to Bay FC. I know personally, in addition to being part of Poderosas, I'm part of another community called Futbolistas, and it was actually started in the Bay in Oakland, and there's tons of Futbolistas, left-wing Futbolistas up there now, you know, big Oakland Roots supporters and Oakland Soul and all that. And so that should be a fun away day. That should, at the very least, getting to go up to Bay and either stay with friends or, you know, get a Airbnb together and all that kind of thing, and really have that traveling presence, which we're already doing for San Diego. Quick shout out to the front office. Get us some buses and we're going to make a difference up there. Okay. Get us some charter buses up and back. And we won't let you down. All right. Make it happen. But just seeing them, and I just love, you know, an ownership group and a front office in Bay FC being really aggressive and wanting it now. And they're breaking transfer fees. They're bringing people from the WSL and from, you know, European top leagues in general, where they, you know, are competing for the Champions League there, and they're attracting them to the NWSL. And so I hope it's a good fit. I hope they all have an off day when they play us, but I hope they do really well. And it's good for the league. Like bringing that kind of star power in is going to be good for the league and good for the long run. And then hopefully it just continues to build and build and build.
Very well said. Very well said. I'm looking forward to all of it. Utah Royals got to step up that recruitment game. But other than that, like, yeah. I'm extremely excited. Huge change that I just want to like close out the NWSL conversation with is that it's no longer everything on CBS, CBS Sports, or Paramount Plus. Although those three are still in the running. So this season, you know, plan ahead, because it's going to be across several ESPN platforms, a new free platform that called NWSL Plus, and ION, which is free through the Freevee platform. It's like an Amazon-owned platform. Also Amazon Prime. And yeah, it's going to be spread out. And this is overall probably good for the league, good for the sport. But it's going to be complicated, and it's going to take a lot of getting used to. So do be diligent about watching it, because I like to watch every game, and I don't know how it's going to work with playback, because obviously I can't watch every game live, but I'm hopeful that it won't be that difficult. Well, I'll try to keep you guys informed, because this is important to me, so I imagine it's going to be important to other people.
This was a big surprise to me, because I thought Paramount, and they're owned by CBS, had the broadcast rights for a good couple of years. And initially, I'm like, oh, why are they, you know, we're going to have to hunt around and figure out where to watch these games, you know, make it easy on us kind of thing. But then thinking back, there were so many Paramount Plus games where the broadcast was trash and the camera angles were trash. And, you know, the cameras would just cut out for long periods of time and all of that. And so hopefully being on ESPN and, you know, whatever this NWSL Plus is going to be a positive and an improvement. I hope none of it is ever behind a paywall, because women's soccer is already just, it's still a baby. It's still fledgling. Like, this is already the second iteration of the NWSL after the original NWSL folded. And then there's been so many other women's leagues that have folded. And so I hope they don't get ahead of themselves in thinking like, oh, now we're this, you know, super successful league and we're this amazing commodity and let's, you know, get paid for it and start kind of getting ahead of themselves. I don't see that happening, but that's just always my fear when a league like this or an organization kind of grows a little bit too fast, when it's like, like learn from your past kind of thing. And hopefully it just makes it that even more people can watch these games. I'm kind of annoyed at having to have like five different platforms, but as long as they're all free and I get to watch my matches, I'm cool.
Well, you know, Paramount isn't free already, and you got to have like cable for a couple of them. But the point is that, you know, we got a big deal with the NFL, got a big deal with these platforms. It's a big influx of money, and the game is growing. The women's game is getting way more popular. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, that's pretty much it for NWSL. We're going to quickly, because we are running out of time, we're going to talk about some shows of solidarity with Palestine across the globe, because, you know, it wasn't just Poderosas doing it back in October. You know, it's been going on throughout our entire off season. There's going to be tons of football solidarity around the world, and I know that you're a little better informed on it than I am.
Yeah, and just thinking about Poderosa's own experience with showing solidarity with Palestine, and we've been flying the Palestine flag since game one. The homie Moon from Pandemonium has been flying that flag since game one, and then all that whack dust up from last season, where suddenly there's a flag ban, and you know they're taking away our stuff, and our Poderosa supporters are getting kicked out, and so we really just wanted to, you know, highlight the larger supporter groups, larger teams, larger players globally that have also been in solidarity and have really tried to hold it down and understand that these global conflicts and oppressions and just these, you know, loss of so much life it just transcends sport. Like all of the folks who say, oh, you know, leave politics out of sports. Like that's not how the world works. That's not a reality. And it's a very privileged position to be able to say, I'm not going to think about, you know, a possible genocide because I want to watch a soccer game. And that's not us. And if you're here for that, you're probably not going to get that. And so, just wanted to highlight a couple in addition to, you know, our own group. Got to have a massive shout out to the Green Brigade, for Glasgow Celtic, have always held it down for Palestine. And if you don't know the history of, Celtic, once you look up any of that, it'll be real quick to see, you see the connection between those supporters and the Irish immigrants and the Scottish fans and the oppression going on right now in occupied Palestine. And so their ownership actually tried to ban and you know prevent the Green Brigade within the supporter section and tried to ban all political messaging, and they're just like, yeah, we're not going to do that. Like that, yeah, you know, take your board membership and your big money and just leave, because that's not what we're about. And so they're just absolute ride or die, and holding it down. Specific to players though, the one we have to, I think, focus on the most because really laid it on the line, was Anwar El Ghazi, playing for Mainz and kind of prime of his career, in Germany, and posted like just really straightforward solidarity messages to social media. Mainz pull him aside. He gets banned for 7 games and they quote unquote say they're going to give him another chance. And I just love that he's like, yeah, I'm just going to like double down on that. And he got his contract terminated. And just him saying, you know, me losing my livelihood is nothing compared to the loss of life and the absolute destruction that's going on in Gaza right now, just to paraphrase his message. And so huge shout out to that level of solidarity. Masraoui with Bayern also gave some support. And then oddly, even though they're in the same league, like nothing happened to Masraoui. Not that we want anything to, but Bayern just says, oh, we talked to him and yeah, he's good. Hakim Ziyech with Galatasaray, huge, you know, solidarity supporter of Palestine, and put on the, you know, his social media, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. Benzema, like, you know, former Ballon d'Or winner, former World Cup winner, and he shows support, and the French interior minister demands that his French citizenship be revoked. Like, get out of here. Like, that's just, that's so obscenely racist and just absurd to even say that. And again, it's messages of, I hope the children of Gaza can be safe, and I hope there's an end to the killing and end to the bombing and the occupation. And everyone's just taking this in just the most ridiculous way. Riyad Mahrez and the Algerian teammates for the longest time have held the Palestine flag ahead of Algeria games. And then my own favorite player, Mohamed Salah, I'm a massive Liverpool supporter. And his was a little, I don't want to say controversial, but he didn't say anything at all for a very long time. Arguably the highest profile Arab athlete, Muslim athlete, just a massive star. And I guess he was really getting a lot of pressure from Egyptian fans of like, why aren't you saying anything? Why aren't you saying anything? Why aren't you speaking out? And finally he had a video produced. I think he's very uncomfortable in front of the camera, and the video was fine. He also made a massive donation to Gaza. And so, you know, he's doing what he can, I suppose. And still feel like, you know, he's a huge supporter. And then, I guess we can just end this with a huge shout out to the Palestine national team, who for the very first time made it to the knockout stages of the Asia Cup. They fought so hard and, just thinking about them finding a sliver of success, given what's happening right now in their own home country, where they can't even be, they can't even, you know, play there or train there or do anything like that. So all of it is just unbelievable. And you know, we wish the best to all the folks in Gaza, and hopefully more people in positions of power, more people that have platforms will speak up and will, you know, really demand that ceasefire and just the you know, all the violence stops.
Thank you so much. That, yeah, well needed shout out to the solidarity around the world. And to football, which will always and has always been political.
Yeah, and by no means was this meant to be an exhaustive list. I'm sure there's some players, some supporter groups, some teams that I've overlooked. And so if that is the case, hit us up. You know, let me know what I missed, who we should be looking out for, and we'll definitely give a shout out on the next episode.
All right, everybody. Coming up next to help end our episode is our guest of the pod today, which is Isaac, who's gonna give you a little history lesson, as we like to do with our segment called Our Story, written and researched by our very own Poderosa Gretchen.
What's good, everyone? It's Isaac. I'm excited for the first Women's World Gold Cup, excuse me. A lot of Poderosas will be out there supporting these incredible athletes, myself included. Can't wait for that. Sad to hear about Camberos' injury. Was really looking forward to seeing her play for El Tri. But, you know, I hope she gets better soon. We'll see her when we go to the Bay FC game. But anyway, there is one group of incredible athletes that won't be at this Gold Cup, Jamaica, or the Reggae Girls. Jamaica, as if you didn't watch the World Cup, they made it out of the group stage for the first time this past World Cup. They got to the round of 16, but were knocked out by Colombia. This is after the national team had been disbanded in 2008 and restarted in 2014. So why isn't Jamaica didn't qualify for this Gold Cup in large part because of many of the World Cup roster athletes boycotted the qualifying tournaments. ¿Por qué? Their soccer federation refused to pay the players fully or correctly for the World Cup performance or for qualifying games prior to the World Cup. Some of the players stated that while this has been one of the hardest decisions they've had to make, they felt it was necessary to take such a drastic stance to put an end to the constant mistreatment they received from the Jamaican Football Federation. In addition, these players found out about their new coach via social media. Not a call, not an email, not a text message. They found out the same time we found out. Within a week of their boycott, the Jamaican Football Federation said the players had been paid. In December, a number of players still hadn't been paid, according to forward Bunny Shaw and goalie Rebecca Spencer. We haven't been able to find an update on this story. The two qualifying Gold Cup games Jamaica had against Panama and Guatemala ended in a loss and a tie, respectively, but most of their stars weren't playing. Point remains that we won't be seeing Jamaica in this Gold Cup, and national team players like Shaw are out breaking records for teams like Man City. Point of the story, pay women.
Thank you so much, Isaac. Yeah, I have to say, Jamaica was one of the most incredible teams to watch at the World Cup. Their performances were phenomenal. Shaw is one of the best players in the world, and we don't get to see her. Because of she's not getting paid, that's wild. Like, there's a lot of teams that have pay inequity, and their national teams are not paying them because they just, you know, they aren't valuing them the way that they do the men's team. And these are incredible, incredible players. So hopefully things turn around and we get to see her. All right. Now moving on to our last segment of the podcast where we plug, you know, our businesses or whatever we're reading, consuming, and, you know, social media. So let's start it off with your LA business of the podcast. Johnson, who you got?
Yeah, I'm excited to do the LA business of the pod. This will be my first time with a shout out. And I want to highlight a business that's been in the community for quite some time, and that is People's Yoga. I personally haven't been to People's Yoga in way too long, but I did quite a few yoga classes there myself. And then they even have a family yoga when my daughter was, 2-3 years old. We were able to go, and it's like, you know, parents and families all together. And it's a little silly, but it's such a cool bonding experience. And so just huge shout out to Lauren and Leah and everyone else at People's Yoga. If you aren't really, you know, looking out for your self-care as much as you should, or taking time for yourself, or you're feeling just, you know, a little stiff from your commute, or looking to seek out some wellness, check out People's Yoga. I know so many folks that go to their classes, so many people who did the yoga teacher training, you know, intensive program there, and now they themselves are yoga instructors. And so it's just such a beautiful place, not only giving this, you know, healing practice to individuals, but then churning out more and more yoga instructors. And so really great people, really great spot. We'll link all the info in the show notes. And so make sure you check them out.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for the recommendation. What about any media that you're consuming, or like, you know, places you're visited? Is there anything else that you're like, hey, you guys got to check it out while it's in LA?
Yeah, just recently, through my work as a high school teacher, I got to go to MoCA, specifically the Geffen Contemporary down there in Little Tokyo. And I part of this really amazing program called Community Art Start. And so big shout out to Gene and everyone else that's down there. But right now, the Geffen Contemporary has a really cool exhibit from an artist named Paul Pfeiffer. I can't recommend it enough. It's not football centric, but he looks at sports in a very interesting way and takes still photos and video and then edits out certain features of the video or of the still photo. And so he has this a series of basketball prints, and they're gigantic, like 5 feet by 6 feet tall, like just these huge prints. But it'll be one basketball player, you know, shooting the ball, getting fouled, whatever it might be. But then all the other players have been edited out, and there's no basketball anymore, and there's no hoop, and there's not even a logo on the jersey. And so, you know, you see these amazing athletes doing these amazing athletic things, but then removed from the context of the sport itself. And it almost gives us this like divine angelic look to them. And they're just breathtaking, just amazingly cool. And then he'll do something similar with video where the last Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao fight, but then he would edit out one of the two boxers. So you just see Pacquiao like fighting an invisible opponent and then Mayweather fighting an invisible opponent. And it just gives you this odd, you know, experience as you see it. And then this one doesn't necessarily fit, but make sure you look for the Price is Right edit, and watch the, you know, his version of the Price is Right. And that's something that just has so much nostalgia for me, like staying homesick from school and all. But it's just an incredible experience, and I can't recommend it enough. So get down to the Geffen Contemporary and check out that Paul Pfeiffer. And then all the exhibits are amazing. There's some other artists there that are showing some incredible art. So be sure to go check it out.
Amazing. I might do that myself, actually. But yeah, last thing that I'm going to plug is our social media. That's where we announce all our events. That's where we keep you guys updated on Palestinian solidarity, highlight our community members. I mean, that's like the hub, you know, even if you want to just stay informed on ACFC, that's where you go. Shout out to our social media team. And that's at poderosas_ACFC on Instagram. Yeah, I can't recommend it enough. Every podcast that we post is going to get promoted there. So yeah, thank you so much for joining me today, Johnson. You know, we've been talking on during the off season and had so much to say, and you recommended this episode, and here we are making it happen. So I appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you, Maite. Definite shout out back at you for just making all this happen and, you know, coming up with all the organizational bits and all the rest of it. And it's just good to be back. If you've made it this far, we appreciate you listening. This is a long episode, but there was so much to talk about. Like, it's, you know, the first off season where we're just really locked in and really, you know, excited for what's next. And so, I think the length of the pod is relative to the importance of what we're talking about. And hopefully you feel the same way. So, I appreciate all of you. And if anyone ever sees us, out at a tailgate in La Fortaleza or anything like that, give a shout out. If anybody wants to be on a Crudo episode, just come hit me up. Be like, what up, Johnson? I want to be on Crudo, and we'll probably have you on, and we can hear your you know, quick takes and everything else after the match. So it was a pleasure. Thank you, Maite.
Of course. And shout out to Isaac and to Gretchen and to the entire podcast team. Bye, everybody.